Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this Sunday, February 5th, 2017, a Super Bowl 51 Sunday as we look forward to Super Bowl 51, Falcons, Patriots. Finally, we've gotten here. After 2 weeks, two long weeks of just, you know, hype and overanalyzation. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram at Real Gerald Quinn. iTunes.apple.com. Look up Cyril Gerald Quinn podcast. You can look up the show, any past and archived episodes as well. So we finally got here again, got into February 5th. The game is, you know, about 5.5 hours away. Super Bowl 51, Falcons, Patriots. Patriots remain a field goal favorite, even up to this point, which has basically been the consistent line since, you know, that came out 2 weeks ago when both teams won their respective conference championships. That has not changed. No major stories right now going into the game as far as anything that has come up. I know Alex Mack will, in terms of injuries, Alex Mack will play with, I'm assuming, a partially fractured leg. I couldn't assume that, or a minor fracture in his leg. I don't think that he would play with a flat out, just outright broken leg. So that's, I mean, that's probably the biggest story moving forward, heading into this game. Really, a ho-hum 2 weeks. Going into this game, these two teams. Listen, Atlanta does not have a lot of star power, not big personalities. I mean, star power. Julio Jones is a star. We know Ryan is, you know, of course, won MVP last night, but he's not, you know, he's not a polarizing big time personality. A guy who's going to say a lot to the press. They like, so it was basically business as usual for both teams. I mean, both teams. I mean, even media week. This over the course of this week, of course, you got the Goodell questions with the Patriots and Brady, and we saw that coming a mile away. Even the Michael Vick stuff was not that big of a deal. I didn't hear too much about it. Of course, Michael Vick has retired officially, and also said, made some comments, had some very nice things to say about Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcon organization. You know, as he continues to, you know, he's completely turned around his life and has demonstrated nothing but class since he was let back in the league back in 2010, coming off 2 years in prison. So really, you know, one of the most boring leads up to a Super Bowl game that I've ever seen. I've had probably less interest in this game leading up than I have in any Super Bowl, because these two teams just are not. Again, the Patriots have been there so many times. We've become used to them. Belichick, Brady. You know, this is the seventh time the Patriots have been there in the Belichick Brady era. 7 times in 16 years. They've basically been going to the Super Bowl every other year. And Atlanta, again, not a big sports town. Does not have, you know, again, if the Falcons had Deion Sanders, prime time Deion Sanders back in the day, or Andre Rison, some guys like that, then that would be different. But they don't have those personalities on their team. So the press conferences, the media day, everything leading up to the game was really in essence about the game. There's only so much you can talk about in terms of X's and O's for 2 weeks. You can get away with it for a week, but for 2 weeks, it's, you know, you've been broke down every play that the teams had. So really, again, you hope that the game, you know, that we get a quality game, whether you're rooting for the Patriots or rooting for the Falcons. You just want a good game at this point, because this postseason, let's be honest, has been horrible, to say the least. We had one classic in Green Bay, Dallas. The rest of these games have been terrible. Atlanta's been blowing out people. New England's been blowing out people. So you just want a competitive game. I have a feeling that you will get a competitive game. Again, you know, the line is at 3. Both of these teams, you know, can score a lot of points. We know the Patriots have the better defense. The question remains, and this is the question that probably will decide the game, can Atlanta drum up enough of a pass rush to bother Tom Brady? That is the major question going into this game. How effective can their pass rush be? When you look at the Patriots, the Patriots have struggled against three franchises during the Brady-Belichick era. Denver, the New York Giants, and the Baltimore Ravens. All three of those teams have one thing in common. That's great pass rushes, especially with Denver and the Giants. You know, Von Miller, Strahan, Umanora, Justin Tuck, Terrell Suggs. You know, the scheme of Baltimore's defense in terms of how they used Ed Reed also was effective against the Patriots. So those are the three teams that have had success against the Patriots in this over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. You have to you have to bother Brady. You cannot sit back there comfortable in the pocket and allow him to pick you apart. Dan Quinn has coached in three of the last four Super Bowls. He's coached against Brady, coached against Peyton Manning. So he is a guy who is used to coaching against Hall of Fame, big-time quarterbacks and immortal-type quarterbacks. And also, you remember the Seattle game from 2 years ago. They really, you know, they knocked Brady around. Now, Brady ended up winning the MVP, deservedly so, had a big fourth quarter. But remember, Cliff Averill got injured in that game. Jeremy Lane got injured in that game. Those are two big injuries that really hurt Seattle's defense. Those are the untold story, the untold tales, subplots in that game. Everybody talks about the last and final play, rightfully so. One of the most shocking plays in NFL playoff, Super Bowl, or NFL history with the Malcolm Butler interception. But the Jeremy Lane and Cliff Averill injury were big because Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett were having their way with the New England offensive line 2 years ago. I mean, Michael Bennett was destroying Tom Brady. Now, 2 years later, the offensive line from the offensive line from New England is much better, much more put together. The Atlanta defensive line is not on the level of what Seattle has as far as pass rush and just overall defensive talent. Maybe they'll get there next year or 2 years from now, but they're not quite there yet. They are a fast defense, a defense that you're not going to run east to west on, a defense that you're going to see New England run north to south. This is going to be a big LeGarrette Blount game. I can see LeGarrette Blount I can see New England trying to pound LeGarrette Blount to try to wear down the fast, small Atlanta defense, and that's the type of game I gotta see. I think we're going to see. We're going to see a physical. The Patriots are going to attempt to be physical with the Falcons. I mean, they're going to try to control the clock, pound them, keep Matt Ryan off the field, and look for them to try to run the ball anywhere from 30 to 35 times. I don't think you'll see. Again, Tom Brady's fingerprints will be on this game, but I don't think you're going to see Patriots go crazy with the pass like they have against Seattle, like they did against Carolina. I think this will be a more methodical. I think that you'll see them do what they did against, say, the Eagles when they had Corey Dillon. I think this will be a methodical offensive showing for the New England Patriots. The question is, can the Atlanta Falcons handle that? Can they get Matt Ryan enough possessions? The Patriots are going to try to cut down on how many possessions that Matt Ryan and the Atlanta offense is on the field. I don't think, as good as the Patriots' defense is, remember, this is not, and I know statistically in terms of points allowed, they had the number one defense. This is not a big-time defense in the mode of what Tampa was in 2002, what Denver was last year. This is not an all-time great defense. They faced seven opponents who ranked in the bottom half in terms of bottom half of total offense. They faced some of the worst offenses in football in nine of their 16 games. So let's keep that in mind. With the Patriots defense. It's a very much improved defense from what it has been the last couple of years, but it is not. This is not an all-time great. It's not the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens here. So we'll see what happens. I'll give you my prediction later on in the program. Just getting started here. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Super Bowl 51, 630, 640. You got, of course, Lady Gaga doing the halftime show. Everybody talks about, you know, what, you know, is she going to do something controversial? You know she is, so I don't know why that question is even on the board. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. Is your call number. Of course, the NFL Hall of Fame was NFL Hall of Fame was chosen, and you know, I watched him, and of course, you got LaDainian Tomlinson, Kurt Warner, Morton Anderson, Jason Taylor, and also Terrell Davis gets into the Hall of Fame. Terrell Davis is deserving. It deserves Kenny Easley, and also Jerry Jones. Cowboy owner Jerry Jones. Listen, no Terrell Davis. No Terrell Owens. Second straight year. And again, the NFL. I'm gonna tell you right now, the NFL media writer, the media football writers, the people who vote on this look bad, not letting Terrell Owens in the Hall of Fame for the second straight year. Last year, you got away with it last year. Okay, receivers normally have to wait. This year, there was zero excuse for Owens not getting into the Hall of Fame. There's no rhyme or reason from a statistical, from a performance standpoint that says that Terrell Owens should not be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, the guy is one of the top five, top 10 receivers of all time. Only guys that have better numbers than Terrell Owens are, you know, Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, you know, Don Hudson, for the stats that he put up in the time that he put up. Not total in the stats, but just in terms of like catches per year, touchdowns per year, stuff like that. Remember, they played when Don Hudson was playing. They're only playing like 12 to 14 game seasons. So. Again, there are only a handful of guys that can even, you know, compare to the numbers that Terrell Owens puts up. So it comes out to a point to where the media doesn't like Terrell Owens, and we're just going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame because we don't like him, or because he wasn't a great guy, or because he was a cancer in various locker rooms. It's not a reason to keep a guy out of the Hall of Fame, period. And again, the NFL comes off looking bad by not letting Owens in. They're looking bad. And again, you know, to his credit, you know, he has not complained once about this, to his credit. Because there's no reason why he should not be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he should have been in there last year. Second year, he absolutely should have been in and should be in. There's no two ways about it. I mean, the guy has over 130 touchdown catches. Even his last season at the age of 37, he had 72 catches for 983 yards and 9 touchdowns. That's his last year in Cincinnati in 2010. So he was a productive player, a high-level player for the better part of his career, even when he wasn't in his prime anymore. He had big years. Had no problem. Again, the others to me are no-brainers. Warner, Tomlinson was all-time great. Morton Anderson. Now, Terrell Davis, did not have a long career. We recognize he was injured the majority of his career, but from 96 to 98, he had three of the greatest years ever for a running back. From that, no running back has had a better 3-year period than Terrell Davis. And consider what he did in the postseason. He got in the postseason. He dominated in the postseason. You look at his resume in the postseason. Now, if you want to complain about him getting in, then you have to take Gale Sayers out, because Gale Sayers' career Gale Sayers was less productive than Terrell Davis. Now, Terrell Davis was not the all-purpose in terms of kickoff and punt return yards that Sayers was able to accumulate over the course of his career. But as a runner, as a pure runner, Terrell Davis blows away Gale Sayers in terms of the yardage and touchdowns he put up. Gale Sayers had like 39 touchdowns. Terrell Davis for his career in a short amount of time, had like 65. If he would have played a full career, if you had gave him like 4 more healthy years, Terrell Davis possibly would have been one of the top three to five running backs in the history of the sport. He was that good. He was that good. Normally, I'm a guy who's big on longevity and at least 10 years where you had to be near at the top of your sport. His case, he was so great. He was like a Halley's Comet. So he is one of those rare exceptions that he was so dominant in such a short period of time that he absolutely deserves to be in the in the Hall of Fame. I know a lot of, from a Redskins standpoint, no Joe Jacoby for 19 years. I didn't realize it was that long that Joe Jacoby was on the ballot for 19 years not getting in. But listen, it's tough as an offensive lineman. It's very difficult to get in as an offensive lineman because there's so many other players, so many other skill position players who are eligible, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers. Difficult for an offensive lineman unless you completely were a dominant player. And Jacoby, you can make a case for him being a Hall of Famer, but he was not the best lineman on the Redskins. Like, he wasn't as good as Russ Grimm, okay? So he's not, and it took Russ Grimm a long time to get in. So I think Jacoby will eventually get in, but maybe take another 2 or 3, maybe another 2 years or so. It's going to have to be where it's a weak class, and this was not a weak class. This was a strong class. When you're talking about LaDainian Thompson, Kurt Warner, guys of that ilk, Jason Taylor, Morton Harrison. This was a relatively strong class, not a great class, but a relatively strong class. Jacoby's going to get in when there's a weak crop of Hall of Famers. That's the only way I see him getting in terms of in the future. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will talk more about Super Bowl 51 and also the week and night that was in the National Basketball Association. That's coming up and much, much more in the first edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Is your call number for this latest edition of the Still Joe Quinn Sports Podcast, Super Bowl 51, coming up around 6:30 as the game will be broadcast on Fox. It's been 20 years since Fox broadcast their first Super Bowl, of course, that came back in the 96 season when ironically, the same New England Patriots were in the game versus the Green Bay Packers. Of course, that was Brett Favre's first and only Super Bowl win, 35-21, the Desmond Howard game. Desmond Howard, of course, had a MVP performance with the kickoff, with his kickoff returns, one for a touchdown that broke the game wide open. You had the 80-yard touchdown from, you know, Rising to Brett Favre to Andre Rising. You know, that game was very competitive for the better part of, you know, three quarters. It was a very competitive game that was broken open midway through the third quarter and just completely tipping over by Green Bay in the fourth quarter with Reggie White and company against. He got his long. You saw Reggie White and Brett Favre, two all-time greats, get their long and Super Bowl win. And New England, and who would know, who knew that New England would make seven more appearances in the game after that loss that dropped them at that point in time, that dropped them to 0-2 in Super Bowls. Of course, they had lost to the Bears, the 85, that great 85 Bear team, 46-10. And, you know, you look at this franchise with the Patriots and you look at how, you know, what I was watching this morning, up early this morning, watching the Tuck Rule game this morning with ESPN did a condensed version of it, an hour and a half version of it with the Raiders and Patriots and, you know, the players. They're getting the insight from the players. And, man, if you're a Raiders fan, that game still to this day has a sting because the Raiders were a better team than the Patriots. At that point in time, 2001 season, the Oakland Raiders were a better football team than the New England Patriots. I mean, that's just, to me, that's all there is to it. I mean, Gannon, at that time in his career, you know, Rich Gannon, we didn't even know, we knew nothing about Tom Brady. About the quarterback player that he was going to be. Rich Gannon was on his way to becoming an NFL MVP the following year and leading the Raiders to a championship. And listen, I know what the rule was, but man, in my book and with my two eyes, that was a fumble. There's no two ways about it. That was a fumble. And you know, to have that go against the Raiders, to have a guy make a 45-yard field goal in the snow, and Adam Vinatieri, who you make a case is the greatest kicker, definitely the greatest clutch kicker of all time, one of the great kickers in NFL history, and certainly will be in the Hall of Fame one day as soon as he calls it quits. He basically saying, listen, it was 50-50 when it left my foot. I mean, 50-50. I mean, how many times you hear a kicker say that, you know, it's 50-50 when it leaves my foot. I mean, these guys have to be some of the most confident athletes on the field considering what they do. And he's basically saying, hey, I didn't know it was going to, I did not know I was going to make it. I didn't know, you know, unlike a couple weeks later when he made the one that won the Super Bowl against the Rams in the Superdome. He said basically that was, you know, he knew it was good at the time it left his foot indoors. Of course, no weather, no snow and no conditions to worry about. But this one, you know, the snow kick, the snow field goal, he said basically, hey, I didn't know that was going to go in, 50-50 at best. And, you know, that was the beginning of the New England Patriot dynasty that no one saw coming, that nobody saw that coming. I mean, you know, they had some good years with Bill Parcells and Drew Bledsoe. Again, made it to the Super Bowl and lost to the Packers. I mean, how it came about that Belichick even ended up there. I mean, you think about how remarkable it is that Belichick and Brady ended up with the Patriots. I mean, Belichick gets hired by the Jets, quits after one day, smartest decision, probably the smartest move decisions he's ever made in his life. And really changed the course of history in terms of two franchises. The Jets, you know, at that time were basically coming off an AFC championship appearance with you can make the case at that time the Jets were a better franchise in New England. You know, they're coming off AFC Championship appearance in 98. They had a rough 99, but they lost their quarterback in the first week or so. Didn't have a quarterback, but the Jets still had some good players on that team. So where if you go from Parcells to Belichick, I mean, the Jets, we could be talking about the Jets in their sixth or seventh Super Bowl. That's how big that decision was that Belichick made. to go from the Jets to the Patriots. And even with the fact that the Jets got compensation for Belichick, the two first round picks, it still didn't compare to getting Bill Belichick, who, by the way, who to me at worst will go down as the second greatest coach of all time. I can't put a man on Lombardi. I just can't. Lombardi was 9-1 in the playoffs, 5 championships, took a Washington Redskins team that was a bad team and turned it had a winning record with them the 1 year he was there after he left Green Bay. Of course, he died right after that, right before the start of the next season. Then only got to coach one season with the Washington Redskins. So I could never put Belichick over Brady, but I feel like if Brady wins this championship, then you have to put him over Montana. I mean, you have to. I mean, I understand they lost 2 games. Montana was undefeated, but now 5 is more than 4. I mean, one will have 5 Super Bowls, the other will have 4. So I'm not going to get into comparisons who had more talent. Listen, Montana had more talent, but the league also was much better in terms of the competition, and the defenses that he faced were much better than what Brady has ever faced in this Super Bowl in his era. I mean, you're talking about the A6 Giants, 85 Bears, the Redskins teams had some good defenses. Montana faced even the Broncos defenses that was the number one defense in the league that year. The Orange Crush, Carl Mecklenburg, Steve Atwater, Dennis Smith, got players like that. So again, very interesting, just a dynasty that we did not see coming with the New England Patriots. As far as the NBA goes this week, again, most of the talk was about, the current, king of the NBA versus a guy, who a lot of people believe is the king of talking, king of the mouth of the South in terms of Charles Barkley and LeBron James. I'll say this. For a guy in LeBron James who has been through as much as he's been through, with how he grew up, with all the attention, with basically being a child star since he was basically 16, 17, 18, handling all the hype, handling all everything that came with being the, quote unquote, the chosen one, for, now 32 years old, Hall of Famer, all time great player. For him to have gone through as much as he's gone through, he has very, and I mean very thin skin. I mean, for him to actually care about what Charles Barkley says about him, and especially when when Barkley's comments were not personal at all. I mean, these were strictly basketball comments. And a lot of people felt the way that Barkley felt. Like, dude, why are you whining? Why are you complaining when you have 2 all-stars? J.R. Smith is injured. LeBron came off looking bad, as far as I'm concerned, with this entire situation. Now, Charles Barkley says a lot of dumb things, a lot of stupid things, a lot of things that you just shake your head at and just keep it moving. Half the time you don't even pay attention to what Barkley says, because some of the things are just so off the charts and stuff that you just, again, that you just say, oh, it's Charles talking, keep it moving. But on this rare occasion, Barkley actually was right. Like, when he says he doesn't want to compete, he's saying that, hey, you should have the mentality as the best player in the world, as somebody who just beat the Golden State Warriors last year. I know without Kevin Durant, that you can beat this team with the players that you have. Like, and that, you're not. What move is Cleveland going to make? I don't think the Knicks are giving up Carmelo Anthony without giving Kevin Love back in return. I just don't think that's happening. Honestly, I just don't believe that deal is going to be made. If anywhere, I think Carmelo Anthony, if he goes anywhere, I think more than likely he's going to be traded in the summertime. But I think if he does go anywhere, it'll probably be to the Clippers. So I don't see – now, Carmelo Anthony wants to win. If Carmelo Anthony wants to win and give himself the best chance to win a championship, he'd be thinking about going to the Celtics. You put Carmelo Anthony on the Celtics, they can get a package for, say, Anthony for a Marcus Smart number one pick. And maybe they probably wouldn't even have to give up Jay Crowder, to be honest with you. Maybe Marcus Smart and number one pick. That's probably all they would have to give up to get Carmelo Anthony. You put him on that team. That team could compete with Cleveland to go to the NBA Finals. So, I don't see Anthony getting traded before this season's over with or before the trade deadline. I think he'll get traded probably on there'll be like a draft night deal, something like that. He'll probably get traded in the summertime. I don't see him going anywhere before then, though. But again, you're LeBron James. I mean, listen, the only guy that can affect LeBron James' legacy at this point in his career is LeBron James. Charles Barkley, there's nothing that an analyst, ex-player, commentator, radio host, anybody that could say about LeBron James that could affect his legacy. So, if I'm LeBron James, it's in one ear, out the other, which as far as what Charles Barkley says about me. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. When we return, we'll talk some college basketball, that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is the call number on this last edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. A wild day in college basketball last night, yesterday, as you had, especially in the Big 12, you had five top 10 teams losing yesterday, including three in the Big 12, with Kansas, Baylor, and West Virginia, Kansas, Baylor, and West Virginia all losing at home to unranked teams. You know, these teams that they're losing to are at best going to be bubble teams for the tournament. Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and Baylor loses to Kansas State. So none of these teams are very good teams. So that, a wild day as far as that is concerned, Virginia, Arizona, and Kentucky also fall hard. Syracuse now has beaten two top 10 opponents back-to-back on their home floor, so they're going to be right in the mix. They're going to be right on that bubble, as they have a winning record in the ACC, but really haven't been that impressive overall. But listen, if you finish with a winning record in the ACC, you have to make the tournament this year. The ACC could get as many as 9 to 10 teams in the conference. So right now, Syracuse is in pretty good shape to make the tournament as long as they have a better than 500 record in the ACC. The performance that stood out to me last night was what Oregon did to Arizona. Oregon's a team that a lot of people in the beginning of the season had in their top five. They lose, the best player, Brooks, for a couple of weeks, maybe for a month. They kind of fall to like 15, 20, had a couple early losses. But now they are completely back and in the mix as far as teams that can win a national championship. They manhandled a good Arizona team. An Arizona team that had previously went on the road and took out UCLA. Now, Oregon will play UCLA this week. That would be, in rivalry week, as you have UNC and North Carolina, UNC and Duke play as well. This Oregon team is very good. They are a very good team. They can get up and down the floor. They can shoot the three. They embarrassed an Arizona team that had been one of the hottest teams in the country. Arizona had won like 12 or 13 straight coming into that game. So that's a performance that, you can look at. That's a team that's coming. You still don't know how good Gonzaga is. Because we've seen Gonzaga have big regular seasons in the past, get to the tournament, and it's a completely different story. I don't know if Gonzaga can win a national championship. Maybe this is a year, maybe with how wide open college basketball this year, this is the kind of year that they can sneak up there and get to not only win a national championship, but even get to a Final Four. Because, again, you have a lot of these top teams that have been losing in bunches. Again, I still, you know, I still think, you know, teams like, I still think Villanova will be there. I still more think North Carolina will, you know, the Pistons, they can get Theo Pinson back healthy, will be there with their experience. Again, you never trust Virginia in a tournament because they always find they just offensively. Louisville is still very good, so I think they'll be a major factor. Duke is a question mark. We know Duke has the talent. Of course, Duke has the talent, but can they put it together before the tournament starts? We'll see about that. We'll see. They have a big game against North Carolina next week. Was able to get by Pittsburgh yesterday at home. Big day for Grayson Allen. Coach K back on the sidelines, and I'm shocked. Let me be honest with you. I'm shocked that Krzyzewski got back as quick as he got back. I really am. Like, I thought that he could possibly be done for the season, but he comes back. But he gets back into the mix, and now that's certainly Duke. You know, Duke has the talent to be a national championship caliber team. The question is, can they put it all together? Can Grayson Allen, you know, keep his nose clean for the rest of the season? So we'll see what happens with that. But college basketball is about to become, you know, after today, when the Super Bowl is over, college basketball will be front and center moving forward into March, into throughout March, you know, for the rest of February and also into March as the premier sport once the NFL is done. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with the college basketball. Again, some big games. North Carolina playing with Notre Dame right now. Some big games coming up next week. And again, a bunch of upsets in the top 10. Again, there's not a dominant team. There's not a dominant two or three teams. You have about anywhere from probably 8 to 10, 10 to 12 teams that could probably win a national championship this year. It's looking like one of those years with the ACC being the dominant conference in the country without question, having as many as 8 to 10 teams that can get to the tournament. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, well, I will have my Super Bowl prediction, that and much, much more on the latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 1 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast, a special Super Bowl 51 edition of the podcast. Of course, next week we will have a special wrap-up, NFL wrap-up, Super Bowl wrap-up, Super Bowl 51 wrap-up on Wednesday. So we'll do that Wednesday, February 8th, around 7:30, 8 o'clock, probably 8 o'clock. So 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock at February 8th at 8 o'clock, we'll have our Super Bowl wrap up. We'll look back on the game, look ahead towards the draft and some burning off season questions. You know, like where will Kirk Cousins end up? Did you see? By the way, before I get to the prediction, did you see Kirk Cousins? Anybody see Kirk Cousins push a flag football official a couple of days ago? Playing flag football. So Kirk Cousins, who comes off as a mild mannered individual, but apparently is a fiery competitor, as a quarterback, he pushes. I don't know if the guy made a bad call. I don't know if he was. I don't know what happened on a particular play, but he pushes the official, and it's like it wasn't a full push to the, you know, Kirk Cousins is like 6'3", you know, 6'3", not a physically imposing guy, but still is a professional athlete, 6'3", over 200 pounds, pushes the dude, and the dude jumps back, but it's moved a little bit, but not, you know, not, again, didn't push him on the ground, but he's playing, first of all, why is he playing flag football? That's number one. where you could easily get hurt in flag football, tearing, you could tear ACL or ankle or something like that in flag football just as easy as you could playing, you know, playing tackle. So that's number one. Number two, again, why are you touching an official in a flag football game? I'm confused. And again, I don't think it was at the Pro Bowl because I don't think they. I think after the Robert Edwards injury, on when they were playing flag football in the sand, I think the NFL was done with that. You famously remember Robert Edwards, who used to play for the Patriots, got hurt, tore up, just completely shattered his knee. About 20 years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, 2001, around that time. 15 or 20 years ago, where Robert Edwards just destroyed his knee playing flag football in the sand. So I think the NFL kind of scrapped that aspect, that part of the of their competition in for the Pro Bowl. But I couldn't believe it that it was actually Kirk Cousins. Like, this guy's putting his ass on the official. So here we go. I think this game will be in the 20s. I think that this game will be played at a methodical pace. I don't think both teams are going up and down the field against each other. I think we're going to see more defense. That being said, I have to pick the New England the Patriots. I hate the Patriots. I hate I think LeGarrette Blount will have a big game. I think that might be a playoff. was tremendous. Even in the 20 loss, 29, 24, 20. Is a small Atlanta defense. That's, to me, will be the difference. I think the New England defense offensive line will overpower the Atlanta defensive line. So, Patriots 27, Atlanta 24, Super Bowl 51. My last pick of the season for the 2016 NFL season. And, of course, that is going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. I hope you enjoy the game, enjoy the commercials, enjoy your food, and I will talk to you Wednesday as we wrap up the NFL Super Bowl 51 and the NFL season. So long.